This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Russia is interfering with the 2020 presidential election. That's according to an assessment by the CIA, which found that Russian President Vladimir Putin and other senior officials are aware of and probably leading efforts to help President Donald Trump win his re-election campaign. If that sounds familiar, there's a good reason. The CIA published a similar assessment during the 2016 election campaign, which found Russia was influencing the election in favor of Mr. Trump. The man in charge of the agency at that time was Director John Brennan. Director Brennan had been working with the CIA since the Carter administration, and he details what happened in 2016, as well as his storied career in his new memoir titled Undaunted: My Fight Against America's Enemies, at Home and Abroad. I spoke with Director Brennan by Zoom and asked him what he wants people to know about how intelligence agencies operate.
Well, one of the reasons why I wrote Undaunted was to give Americans an idea of the sacrifices and the selfless work and the patriotism that so many American men and women engage in order to keep their fellow citizens safe. And I had the great privilege to work in national security for 33 years. And I was just really, really impressed with the dedication of these individuals. And so what I wanted to do was to make sure I was able to explain exactly some of the challenges, the complexities, as well as the very rewarding nature of the intelligence profession. This book is my opportunity to provide some insight into that for the average American. I think a lot of Americans believe that the CIA is a rogue organization that does a lot of things around the globe. That's not the case. We operate under strict guidelines and authorities. We take direction from the National Security Council and a president of the United States. And we also have to explain ourselves to Congress, to the committees of jurisdiction that oversee the intelligence community. And so that's why I tried to give people a sense of what I experienced during my 33 years. And I'm really hoping to encourage young Americans to give serious consideration to pursuing an intelligence profession as a future career.
While reading the book, you definitely get an idea for the many layers of, I don't know if you'd call it bureaucracy, but of essentially protection that separates the different offices inside of the CIA, that separates the information that's given to different people. One of the things you mentioned that I thought was really interesting was before you were giving presidential daily briefings, you'd actually never seen one.
Well, as you can imagine, there are some exceptionally sensitive sources and methods that the intelligence community, and particularly CIA, rely upon in order to gain insight into the threats that our nation faces. And in order to protect those very sensitive sources, both technical collection systems as well as human sources, there needs to be a compartmentation of information so that there's not going to be any leaks that could put those sources as well as systems at risk. And so when I was an analyst in my early years at CIA, I might have seen some individual PDB, that's the President's Daily Brief, articles that were written in there. I wrote some of them myself, but until I was the actual briefer, daily briefer for President Clinton, I had never seen the entire book of the President's Daily Brief. Again, it's an effort to try to limit the exposure of this information too broadly, because unfortunately, you know, we have had experience in the U.S. intelligence community of having some bad apples. And what you don't want to do is to allow this information to be more broadly exposed than it needs to be.
It did make me curious. What is generally in the presidential daily briefing, and what kind of access to information does someone like the president and the vice president, what kind of access to information do they have?
Well, it's the intelligence community and CIA's responsibility to make sure that the president, vice president, and members of the national security team are kept fully informed of the issues around the globe that have the potential to hurt our national security interests or to advance our national security interests. And so a president and vice president should have access to all of the intelligence and analysis that they need in order to promote this country's welfare and security around the globe. And so therefore, the CIA officers have a responsibility to go through the various means, various types of intelligence and information they have, some of it that is clandestinely collected, some of it which is in what's called open source, that's publicly available, and try to make sense out of it so that when a president sits down with his national security team, that the intelligence briefing is the first thing usually that they hear. Now, the president will be receiving these daily reports, the PDB, and that PDB will include things of a very short term or urgent matter, but also will include some pieces that look more strategically and over the longer term of the threats and risks, for example, that are posed by China or by Russia. But there's also a lot of information about terrorist plots and plans, as well as proliferation activities. So one of the challenges for intelligence professionals is to decide what should be teed up to a president and the team, and how the analysis should be presented to them. But I found that during my career, I worked for six presidents, from Jimmy Carter to Barack Obama, and every one of them, without exception, was exceptionally appreciative, as well as exceptionally intellectually curious and wanting of information intelligence that would allow them to better understand the lay of the land around the globe, as well as the implications of the policy decisions that they inevitably would have to make on some of these key issues.
You did have a kind of briefing, it seemed, with President Trump right at the beginning of, actually before he had become the president. What was that experience like?
Well, in some respects, it was a bit surreal. And in fact, it is the first chapter of my book, Undaunted, that on Friday, January 6th, I accompanied Jim Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, Jim Comey, the Director of FBI, Mike Rogers, the Director of the National Security Agency, as we went to Trump Tower to brief Donald Trump and his incoming administration team on Russian interference in the presidential election. We had completed an intelligence community assessment in the days prior to that meeting, and it was our responsibility to brief that incoming team about the threat that Russia poses and what they did in that election. But it was, as I said, a bit surreal because Donald Trump is unlike anybody else that I encountered in the White House, in the Oval Office, in terms of their, I would say, lack of receptivity to hearing the truth and hearing what intelligence professionals have to offer to a president.
It did seem rather remarkable reading about that exchange. It made me wonder, you know, you've worked with so many presidents, of course, but you've also worked with a lot of world leaders. You've met a number of them. Is there another politician that you've met in your career who you would say is most comparable to Mr. Trump?
Well, I would say that Mr. Trump is a rather unique individual, certainly unique among American presidents. He has very similar traits to a number of authoritarian leaders that I met around the world and that I assessed and analyzed. His pursuit of very personal agendas and his efforts to delegitimize the media, the intelligence community, the law enforcement community, the fact that he, you know, refers to fake news, the fact that he is trying to use, I think, our Department of Justice and other institutions of government to promote his own interests. And this is what authoritarian leaders do around the world to preserve their positions of influence and power. And so, although Donald Trump is a very unique American president, He really does share a lot of those same characteristics and traits of individuals who trample upon democratic principles and try to gain a monopoly on political power and use intimidation and bullying tactics. A lot of the authoritarian leaders that I met and assessed had very similar narcissistic qualities. And also a real sense of paranoia in terms of believing that, you know, everybody's against them and just will continue to be on the offensive and to be very dishonest in terms of their portrayal of events and what they claim to be facts. So, yes, he is unique, but unfortunately, I have seen the same type of actions, behaviors, and attitudes in many other authoritarian leaders over the course of my career.
I'd like to get into Russian interference in the 2016 election in just a moment. But first, when we look at someone like President Trump, what makes him an attractive politician to foreign leaders like most notably in this case, Russian President Vladimir Putin?
Well, I mentioned in the book that Vladimir Putin likes to deal with government leaders who were businessmen because he believes that they're willing to make deals and that they're not driven by principles or even ethics. And so I think a lot of the authoritarian leaders around the world like the fact that Donald Trump is really not holding them to account for human rights abuses. That he is allowing them to continue to operate as authoritarian leaders and to suppress and repress political expression in their countries. Donald Trump tends to look at the world, I think, through a prism that is partly his brand and reputation, but also through a dollar sign prism. That's why he looks at issues related to Saudi Arabia through a prism of money and finances. And the fact that he basically ignored the horrific murder and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, a reporter, opinion writer for the Washington Post, I think is just a very egregious example of a failure of U.S. leadership. So I think he also, the fact that he considers himself to be a strong man, sometimes individuals will like the people that reflect some of the same attitudes and behavior as themselves. And I think that's the case with Donald Trump.
I'm speaking with CIA Director John Brennan about his book, Undaunted. You know, you mentioned Jamal Khashoggi. For people who may not know, he was a Saudi Arabian dissident who was murdered. And it seems the CIA assessed that the Saudi Arabian government knew about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. I'm so sorry. I have a hard time with his last name. They knew about it. They likely planned it. And the Trump administration, as you say, refused to really acknowledge that. What does that say to dissidents who find safety in our borders, but also people who we depend on around the world for information?
Yeah, it's a very good point, Joy, that I think for decades, if not, you know, over the past century, the United States really has stood for what is right in the world. And presidents of both political parties, Republicans and Democrats, I think very much called out these types of atrocities as being inconsistent with human values. And when Donald Trump would ignore basically what happened in Saudi Arabia, and the press reports indicate that the CIA assessed with moderate confidence that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, bore responsibility for that killing, I think it sends a very unfortunate signal to other authoritarian leaders that they can get away with similar types of atrocities. But also, I think it sends a very chilling signal to those freedom-loving individuals around the world who look to the United States to try to protect them against this type of political repression, violent repression. And so I'm sure that a lot of the political dissidents in places like Russia or China or other countries really are reluctant, I guess, to push for an opening up of their political systems because they don't believe that the United States would be there under a Trump administration as it would have been in other administrations, not to intervene in the internal affairs of these countries, but to call out those individuals and those governments that really are not upholding their responsibilities of governance to their people. And the voice of an American president is especially strong around the globe. And so words matter. And unfortunately, I think Donald Trump's words have done nothing to advance American interests, even the prospects of peace and stability around the world. I think they have really undermined the U.S. leadership role and the role of the United States in standing up for human rights, which is, I think, one of the foundation stones of our democracy.
One of the revelations that has recently come out about Mr. Trump is that he has a lot of debt. And I know that's something that often makes you ineligible for security clearance. I'm curious to know, why is that the case? Why is that something that is a risk to security?
Well, anybody who is in a precarious or difficult financial situation, sometimes they can be induced to do things in order to improve their finances. And in this day and age, when there is so much information in the cybersphere, in the digital domain, about our finances and our records, it is something that foreign intelligence services certainly try to go in and find that information to find out who might be vulnerable to some type of overture, who might be willing to give some secrets or do something for $10,000, $20,000, $500,000. And so if Mr. Trump has these tremendous financial liabilities and he needs to get out of that financial predicament, especially a person of such, you know, such a senior position, might he do things as favors to others in order to reap some type of financial benefit? And that's why, at least according to the New York Times reporting on this issue, given the financial straits that he appears to be in, now he certainly has some assets, but his liabilities look really significant. And a person in that situation, and you can even take away some of the zeros at the end of his, you know, numbers, anybody in that type of financial situation, it's been my experience that they would not qualify whatsoever for a security clearance if they apply for one. And secondly, if they were already in the government and they were going through a security review, which all government officials with security clearances go through every few years, their security clearances, I believe, would be suspended until it was looked at, and likely then revoked if there were still outstanding questions about just how financially vulnerable they might be.
But with someone like the president, it doesn't seem like or feel like that's an option. And he's privy to so much information. Is there a way of removing security clearance from someone like a president? It doesn't seem like it.
The only thing that can be done in that regard is for an impeachment and a conviction by the Senate to remove a president from office. Short of that, no. The director of the CIA, the director of national intelligence, cannot just unilaterally decide to revoke a security clearance for a president of the United States. What they can do, though, is to be cautious about what it is that they say or share if an individual, such as the president, is careless in how they handle classified information or what they might do with it. And I say in my book that when I went to Trump Tower in January of 2017, I was very wary about providing Donald Trump any specific information about sources and methods. I talked about the intelligence and the analysis fully, but I was very, very reluctant to provide any type of specifics on source of methods that he might not handle appropriately, and that could be damaging to our human sources around the globe who rely on us to protect them, as well as our very, very exquisite and sensitive technical collection systems.
It seems like since then, so much of this has become politicized and really viewed through a partisan lens. I think some people would hear your explanation and say, so you're keeping information from the president. That doesn't seem good. That seems like something that a Democrat would do. That seems like something that a liberal would do. And, you know, you talked about your experience briefing the Gang of Eight, which about specifically Russian interference in the 2016 election. You specifically focused on your experience with Senator Mitch McConnell. Can you describe that a bit?
Yeah, but and again, I didn't keep intelligence from President-elect Trump. What I kept was details about the source of methods, about how we collected it. But yes, Senator Mitch McConnell was one of the, what's called the Gang of Eight. These are the senior most officials in Congress, both in the Senate and the House. I briefed them in August and September of 2016 on what we knew about Russian attempts to interfere in the election. And most of those members of the Gang of Eight were very, very interested in the issue and encouraged me to continue to try to find out as much as we could about it. Unfortunately, Mitch McConnell, when I briefed him, looked at me and basically said, you know, it sounds as though the CIA is working with the Obama administration to prevent Donald Trump from becoming president, basically accusing me and the CIA of politicizing intelligence. Well, I, you know, reacted rather strongly, but kept my, you know, Irish temper to a minimum. And I just said that I hoped that Senator McConnell was not implying that I was politicizing, and we were politicizing intelligence, because I would take great umbrage at that. And so it was a rather chilly discussion that we had, but he clearly greatly irritated me, because I thought that somebody of his stature and responsibility would have reacted the way others, including members of his party, reacted, seeing this as a very, very grave threat to our democracy. Senator Richard Burr, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, a Republican from North Carolina, you know, really was quite concerned and encouraged me and the CIA to do all we could to find out what the Russians were doing and try to stop it if we could. The same holds true for the Speaker of the House at the time, Paul Ryan. They reacted the way an American should act, not someone who's looking at the issue through this partisan prism, which clearly was what McConnell was doing. You know, when it comes to the security threats to this country, we need to set aside our whatever partisan, you know, sentiments we might have or affiliations. I know a lot of people think that since I'm talking out so much about Donald Trump that, you know, I'm a Democrat. Oh, I'm neither a Democrat nor a Republican. That's why I refer to myself as a nonpartisan. In fact, during the Obama administration, it was mostly Democrats in Congress that were either calling for my head or to be fired, because I would call out the Democrats if I felt that they were not doing things consistent with their oaths of office and making sure that they were pursuing national security issues in a manner that really strengthens the interests of the country as opposed to their partisan agendas.
You know, as you say, Director Brennan, so much of your book does deal with this idea of separating politics from the work of our intelligence agencies. What do you believe is the danger of viewing the CIA and the FBI in terms of partisanship, and how does that impact national security?
I think it is exceptionally damaging if the institutions that we rely on for our security, our safety, such as CIA and the FBI, are going to become political pawns in the hands of corrupt politicians. We really need the CIA and FBI and others to carry out their responsibilities and to tell proverbial truth to power and not be used and abused by the politicians. This is what the authoritarian leaders around the globe do. They use their intelligence and security services. They use their court system as a way to go against their opposition and their rivals. They spy on their people. And so many of Donald Trump's accusations about what the Obama administration did, in terms of the investigation of the Russian interference, it's just pure fabrications. And what they're accusing the Obama administration of doing in terms of politicizing these institutions, they are the ones who are doing it. I think if anybody looks at what William Barr has done as Attorney General, you cannot escape the conclusion that he's not operating as the Attorney General of the United States. He's operating as the defense attorney and the enabler of Donald Trump. And it really pains me to have to speak out so forcefully and so publicly about this. And I was hoping that I was going to retire and into a nice, quiet life. But the abuses and the corruption that I see is unprecedented in my lifetime. And so I'm very worried about what is happening now to these institutions that the American people really need to rely on, that are not going to be subject to manipulation and exploitation by the politicians. But unfortunately, I think Donald Trump has had a very toxic effect on so much of the senior leadership in Washington today.
Well, Director Brennan, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect. I wish I could talk to you longer. There's really so much in the book, but thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me.
Thank you, Joy. I really enjoyed it. And I do miss the opportunity to go back to Milwaukee. I was there a number of years ago. I really enjoyed it. And unfortunately, in the COVID environment now, we cannot travel as much as we would like. But I do look forward to being able to return there one day. It's a great city, great people. So thank you so much for this invitation.
Director John Brennan is the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, more commonly called the CIA. His memoir is called Undaunted, My Fight Against America's Enemies at Home and Abroad, and will be available to the public on October 6th. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.